It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Kevin Cook is with us today. He's the author of the recently published book, Memorial Coliseum, 75 Years as Monument, Stage, and Arena. It's a look back at the history of the building that was home to Wildcat men's basketball from 1950 until the move to Rupp Arena in 1976. It is still the home of women's basketball, volleyball, gymnastics, and the stunt team. And Kevin, this was quite an undertaking. Congratulations on the publication of the book.
Thank you, Keith, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, and of course, there are many, many memories of Memorial Coliseum for those of us who attended games there. I was fortunate enough to do that when I was a student at UK. It's a beautiful building, a beautiful place to watch basketball, but it is much more than that, and you get into that in your history and talking about the memorial part of Memorial Coliseum. So let's just start there. The sure. process took a long time from the time when people began to realize that basketball was going to be a big thing here and continuing to have demand. But many years passed before the Coliseum actually opened its doors. World War II entered there. But tell me about how the whole thing came about.
Well, it's probably a couple things. So the first one was almost as soon as Alumni Gym opened in 1925, and as the basketball team got more prominence, particularly when Adolf Rupp came in 1930, very soon the university and the fans realized they needed a bigger place to have the basketball games. So by the end of the 1940s, after World War II and the GI Bill, the university enrollment had really exploded. In the last few years of Alumni Gym in the late 40s, they actually could only have the students attend. They played less and less home games because they could go to a bigger arena, have more fans come to them, get more publicity, say in Chicago, New Orleans, New York City, Madison Square Garden. So the fans were kind of being squeezed out at home. And by the late 40s, the students, only half of them could go to a game at a time. They could only seat about 2,500 students, maybe squeeze in 3,000 if the fire marshal wasn't looking. So they knew for many years they needed a bigger arena. Now, with World War II, they were also, as a state, were looking for some type of monument. Now, you go back to World War I, and that's where Alumni Hall, which is a very is the icon of the university, that was actually a World War I monument. And inside, one of the professors, Professor Herrine, he is an engineering professor. He had handwritten about 1,000 names of Kentuckians who had died in World War I. So that was kind of the background. So for World War II, President Herman Donovan, the fairly recent new president of the University of Kentucky, went to the legislature with the Board of Trustees backing and proposed that, hey, now would be a time where you could do a number of things at once. One, you could get a bigger basketball arena, but more importantly, have a monument to the Kentuckians who had died in World War II, and also present this and make this as a general gathering place for Lexington, even the whole state, as an auditorium for a number of things. But one, to remember the war dead of World War II, to also have things such as concerts, orations for the general public as well as the students, and then finally to get a heck of a lot of seats for Kentucky basketball, mm-hmm. which would please everybody, particularly Coach Adolf Rupp, who wanted about 15,000 seats, ideally for him. So that's kind of the background. So everything came together. They were able to do a $4 million project that was opened in on Memorial Day of 1950 is when all this came together with Memorial Coliseum. At the time, it was total cost of $4 million. Seems a pittance today. Mm-hmm. But it was really a big-time stretch financially for the whole state back then.
And in your approach to the book, I mean, obviously there are a lot of basketball memories in there, but as you mentioned, there were orations, commencement exercises, speakers, which included three presidents, one former yes. President Ford, and then Lyndon Johnson, who was in office, and then Dwight D. Eisenhower yes. made a campaign stop there. So there were, and then, of course, a variety of concerts as well. With all that going on, how did you try to get that into an approach to the book that would be doable and yet accurate as to what all the Coliseum is?
Right. Well, you don't want to make it too big. You can go on and on forever. So you yeah. have to be choosy, and there's a lot of things you'd like in there. So that's kind of the hard part of anybody doing a book or anything that they enjoy, you know, a piece of art, you got to cut it down and go with that. So we kept it to about 200 pages, focusing on things such as the actual memorial aspect of it, how it was dedicated, the types of memorials that are physically present in the Colosseum, such as the names of those Kentuckians who have died from World War II on. It goes up to the present day. Things such as bronze, pictures of the bronze stars that represent everybody who was associated with UK as a student, staff, or employee. And there's even a chiseled part of a very famous poem at the time called For the Fallen at the entranceway coming into the Colosseum. So you want to present all of those as well. Then you want to have room for the basketball. And then also to show, I wanted to document what the Colosseum looked like prior to this renovation. A major renovation was $82 million, took over a year to do. And what that did, it preserved a lot, and it made the Colosseum still a show place for years to come. But it had to significantly change what was still a lot of the original parts and pieces of the Colosseum, such as the seats. The seats were 75 years old. They were original wooden seats in the main arena area. People enjoyed them, but they weren't very comfortable.
Right. Yes.
And, of course, it was not air-conditioned. It is now air-conditioned. So I wanted to have that aspect of it. I also wanted to pay tribute to the women's who, when the men's basketball team moved out in 1976, the women basketball team was already playing there, but that became the main women's athletics venue for the gymnastics, the stunt team, the volleyball, the women's basketball. So that's been the women's main venue for now going on, you know, 50 years for that. And that had to be documented and acknowledged and praised as well. Then there was a section where I actually went to people. They were former players, coaches, just fans, people I knew, and asked them for a personal memory of the Colosseum. Some were very short, some were longer, but it's what it meant to them. And it was everything from going to a concert. It wasn't necessarily going to UK basketball. So that's that's a separate chapter. I think that's important because it really personalizes what the Colosseum means to people across a wide spectrum of activities and feelings. And then also a little bit beyond the Colosseum, because it is a war memorial, I wanted to pay tribute to the military history of the University of Kentucky. I'm a Navy veteran. I come from a Navy family. So it's not that long, but it is in the book. Kind of connects the Colosseum to a larger, a military history of the campus, memorials that people may not be aware of, little plaques and things going back from prior to World War I, even, and things such as Buell Armory, where the ROTC of Air Force and Army is today, and a little bit of the history of that. So that kind of connects it to the reason why I think the campus of the university is so much, has already been an appropriate place for Memorial Coliseum. It already had that history prior to the building of the Coliseum. So there's a lot to put into the book. Mm-hmm. Every piece probably shorter than I'd like it to be. But I want a lot of pictures. It is an illustrated history. There is text in there, I think, that gives the background. I try to make that interesting. But hopefully it feels, it touches, you know, the emotions and the memories of a lot of people in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I want to ask you about all those great photos that are in there and depicting different occasions and some basketball highlights, but many, many other things as well, and just a really wide range of photos and the job involved in collecting those. But let me ask you first, though, about during the construction of the Colosseum, and we talked a little bit about the money issues that went on for years, and President McVeigh was very concerned about having the university go into debt for such a facility. President Donovan a little more positive, and then things began to take shape. But you mentioned the Adamstown community right there just across, for those who don't remember, Memorial Coliseum. At one time, just across the street was the football stadium and Stahl Field. And of course, when Stahl Field was already there, when the building of the Coliseum took place, then the neighborhood there had to go. Tell me about the remembrance of that.
Yeah, well, thank you for mentioning that. And there are a couple of plaques put up outside of Memorial Coliseum, sort of on the back end where the Kraft Center is, if people can go there. There are historical plaques from the university mentioning Adamstown. And there's some, I think, very interesting aerial photographs in the book that show what was there prior to breaking ground on the Coliseum. And it was a whole African-American historical neighborhood. Going back further, it was larger. It had kind of been chipped away in its size as the university expanded across what is now Avenue of Champions. That time was Euclid Avenue, has different names over its lifetime. But as UK sort of expanded northward from its historic first campus, across that street, started building dormitories. There were some fraternity buildings that were built there, and a bowling alley. So Adamstown was kind of getting smaller and smaller, and most of these were rented to African-American families. That was, so as they start getting squeezed out, they have to move elsewhere. And eventually UK bought several square blocks over time as they negotiated the purchase of these properties. So it did destroy and have the result of a number of black families having to move out of that area to other places. So you did lose that neighborhood. And that's I think, acknowledged on the plaque and acknowledged, in the book as well. Mm-hmm. You do gain something, but you do lose something as well.
And you mentioned the aerial photos from that, and that was just only a part of the extensive collection of photos that are in the book, which means that you must have looked at many, many more beyond those that are in the book. Tell me about the process of getting these great photos and assembling them.
Well, what it helped me, I had probably a three-year experience of looking online. And by the way, if this was not available online, which it is, this book probably wouldn't have been possible with schedules and having to go in and physically look at them at the university archives. So that would have been taken much longer, probably been a 20-year project instead of a couple years. But in a previous book where I'd done a history for all the UK arenas from Alumni Gym all the way through the opening of Rupp Arena, I'd spent a number of years looking at pictures. Some of them I used in a previous book, others I sort of made a note of. I said, hey, that'd be great to use in the future. And then with the 75th anniversary of the Coliseum coming this year, and then the renovation happening at basically almost the same time, that's what brought to mind doing an illustrated history focused on the Coliseum. And I was able to go back and relocate a number of those photos that I could now use and also add to those. So generally is looking at from the UK online archives where many of these pictures come from, looking at just general, doing keywords such as basketball, but then also looking through old yearbooks every year and seeing a lot of times there's a good picture, but it's not the best quality and you can't really reproduce it. So that was kind of sad. You say, hey, that's great, just can't use it. Also through athletic programs, found a lot of things there. And so that's where much of it came from. And probably, again, if I had not already had the prior experience of the previous book, this would have taken longer, so we may have been talking 2 or 3 years in the future.
Yeah, at least it's not back in the days where you have to shut yourself up in a room somewhere and start going through
physical photos. Yes, I tried that a couple of times, and that was not very productive. Yeah. Yes.
There's also, in addition to the picture history, there's a lot of background in the text, as you mentioned. And so you're finding some of these great moments in Memorial Coliseum history and significant moments in Kentucky history, for that matter, like the visit of the presidents. But you have to also provide some information. You can put a photo of Lyndon Johnson receiving his honorary doctorate, but you need some background there, too. So tell me about the research involved there.
Well, some of that came that I had I didn't just totally reuse things, but I kind of, some of them I had written about before. I try to write about them differently, bring out different facts, but a lot of it is just, is totally new stuff. You mentioned Lyndon Johnson coming. That was very interesting because he came as the keynote speaker for the centennial celebration of the university, and that was in 1965. And the story there, that kind of the background I try to bring out in the text was, everything looks hunky-dory. He's receiving his honorary doctorate degree. But right after that, as he left, the story of the witnesses is that he kind of tossed some of his robes and things aside because he had just possibly gotten bad news from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So he kind of came on the university in good spirits and kind of left in a huff. So that's kind of a neat, interesting background to that moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can't go too far in the history of Memorial Coliseum without talking about Adolph Rupp. And you mentioned that he wanted an arena with 15,000 seats. Yes. It wasn't quite 15,000, but obviously he was a key figure in how this all came about. How would you sum up his role? I mean, he had been here almost 20 years and obviously extremely successful. Yes. So how would you describe his role in this?
Well, use the words, the house that, you know, Rupp built. That's not totally true, but in a sense, it probably wouldn't have been as big and as nice. They knew that although it was going to be used in a number of ways, you know, probably the one that was going to pay and attract people the most over the most time, most consistently, was going to be the basketball games. And, you know, Rupp could bring him in. They had the seating was strictly was about 11,500. And Rupp would have wanted it wrapped around, seating all the way around. Those that know Memorial Coliseum know that originally on the south end where the lobby is, it was just a large, imposing flat wall. They would put temporary stands in there, which would seat about 350. And then for big games, which are just about every game, they would allow students to sit in the aisles and around the court. They would get up to, you know, over 14,000 in there. But Rupp from the very beginning, you know, he's known to have said even to while he's sitting at the dedication ceremony for the basketball team that he's up there, you know, telling the people beside him it's not big enough. And so that was, you know, another time, another day when you can get Rupp Arena and get a few more seats in there.
And the atmosphere at the Coliseum, I mean, I can vouch for the fact that it was a tremendous basketball atmosphere. But if you could put into words with the flat roof and all, tell me about the feeling that you got after your research about the sound, the spirit of the Coliseum when the basketball team took the floor.
One thing that's very helpful is that in the archives there are a lot of oral history and recordings. And there's a lot of recordings from Claude Solomon, who was the voice of the Wildcats during and then succeeded, concurrent with and then succeeded by Kaywood Ledford. But Claude Solomon has, if you listen to those, you can go and listen to those for free, and you can get a sense of going back in time, and you can feel the crowd even pregame. So, you know, the overall feeling of going to one of those games would have been anticipation. And then with these iron gates where the players would come from the locker room would open, and then people would know this about time. The team would then come out. Place would explode. You mentioned the flat roof, which seemed to hold that sound in. And then finally, after they would come out, Adolph would come out later, and the band would always yell, "Hello, Adolph."
Yes, they did.
In unison. That was always a big part of it. And then they would have, at least in the early days, they would have, right before the tip-off, they would everything would be silenced, and there would be a prayer given, typically by someone from the YMCA, for world peace. And that tied into this being a war memorial and wanting to have peace instead of war. So you can hear all that on the recordings, and then, you know, the cheers and the yells. Rupp Arena is certainly bigger, but all the old-timers that remember, you know, will swear that Memorial Coliseum was louder. I don't know if it was, but it'd be hard to beat it. And just a little more intimate, but it's kind of interesting. It is, you know, it's built like an auditorium, so it has curved sides. So you look at those pictures and you think, well, you know, kind of at the half-court line, the fans are kind of further away than they are maybe now. But still, that a lot of times would be filled in maybe by students sitting in there, and with the smaller confines, the noise would make up for that.
There are many basketball highlights in the book, of course. One of them involved a loss at the Coliseum, the first loss for Kentucky in 129 games, going back to, I believe, 1943. This occurred January 8th, 1955, to Georgia Tech, and that would have been also, of course, the first loss at the Coliseum, where they had already been playing for 5 years.
Yes.
That in itself is one of the things that stands out, but you've got a lot of basketball highlights in there. But that one was a milestone.
Yeah, I think they won 84 straight when they came over from Alumni Gym in 1950, and you know, some of the players have remarked they didn't want to be the one that lost that first game, and it got such to be a long home winning streak. I think it may have even been at Ripley's, believe it or not. I'm sure it was. It got to 129, and then things escape me. I can look at my book. I won't cheat. But there was a big game after Georgia Tech, and UK was kind of looking past it, so the story goes. It was sort of a nip-and-tuck game, and Georgia Tech actually won it very late. And Georgia Tech was traditionally sort of a bottom feeder in the league. They were not one of the stronger teams. And so it was just devastating. And, you know, from what I've read, it was just was complete silence when the horn sounded. All you could hear was Georgia Tech celebrating.
Yeah.
And then the bad thing was Kentucky didn't lose again until they went to Georgia Tech for revenge. Later that season, they lost again.
Wasn't their year with the Yellow Jackets. There was also a season that was lost. They didn't play a schedule because of violations, and that was, 52-53? So here's this new building, and then 2 years later, you don't even get to play a schedule. How did that affect people's attitudes, if anything, toward the Coliseum and wondering about its future?
Well, one of the things, you know, you sort of hear these legends, and you want to go back in the research. I want to give the accurate history, so you go back to the newspaper accounts at the time. You know, hopefully those are pretty accurate. excuse me. But that season, there had been a point-shaving scandal that had kind of gone back a few years. And that's a whole other story. Some of the U.K. players were implicated, not the coaching staff directly. So the SEC and the NCAA together would not let teams schedule against Kentucky that year. So basically, it was a year without any official games. And that was 52-53. And Kentucky had probably the best team in the country. Could have been potentially, you know, a national championship. They had Frank Ramsey and Cliff Hagan, two all-time All-Americans for Kentucky at that time, and other really stellar players. So that year, the story goes that they played three exhibition games, just blue-white games, intra-squad games, at the Coliseum when they were all sold out. Not quite the story. The crowds are very big. There were three of them. And it may have been four. I'm losing track here, but three or four. And they were anywhere from 8,000 up to about 10,000. So very good crowds, and which is, you know, an exhibition. They don't really get that today for blue and white.
Right.
And, you know, so they did come out even in bad weather, and they were interesting games. They kind of divide things up different ways. But everybody was just like had to sit through this agonizing year waiting for the next year. And that was when Kentucky went undefeated. Did not go to the NCAA tournament. I won't get it on.
Yeah.
They chose not to go because their top players were deemed to be ineligible by the NCAA because they were graduate students. They had held on for another year. So they could play the regular season. And kind of at the end of the year, they found out they couldn't take them. And Adolph Rupp basically says, we're not going, you know, with a team that could lose. I want my perfect record. And I'm kind of glad they got that perfect record, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a 25-0 mark.
Yes.
For that 53-54 season.
Yes.
But apparently then it was just a matter of almost building up anticipation for the next year, as opposed to people wondering about what the future would be 2 years into this brand new building, and all of a sudden there's no regular season.
Yes.
Yeah.
So probably two more championships UK could have gotten, but don't have.
Yeah. So they basically basketball just barreled right on through that, and they suffered through that 1 year and then came back strong the next year. We mentioned the atmosphere in the Coliseum, and one of the things that affected the atmosphere in the Coliseum, or at least was part of it, was the smoking. It's hard to realize that now, but people even now the smoking was not permitted, but they smoked out on the concourses, which led to a cloud of smoke inside the arena, something like that.
Well, smoking had a good long history at UK basketball games. Going back to Alumni Gym, big signs, you know, no smoking by order of the fire marshal. But they always had so much smoke in there that they, you know, I'm talking about Alumni Gym, the old gym. The folks that were sitting at the top had a hard time seeing the court. So the story goes. Memorial Coliseum, they build that same signs go up. You're not supposed to smoke anywhere in the building. And yet, there's always a big cloud of smoke, and there is a picture in the book where it's in the concourse, and can you count the cigarettes and the pipes in hands, and I can't remember how many I counted up, but I'm sure I'm missing some. There's at least eight or so in this crowd picture. Smoking was not allowed, but it did go on.
some of the other basketball highlights as we cover the history of Memorial Coliseum. You were a fan, of course, and I'm sure no doubt enjoyed looking back into these records of basketball history. But what teams or what players were you particularly glad to discover and want to include in the book for some of the great moments that they had?
Well, some of the opponents that are included in there, Jerry West, mm-hmm. who played in what was used to have the UKIT, University of Kentucky Invitational Tournament. And West Virginia came there three straight years. And Jerry West was there, you know, as a sophomore, junior, and senior, and just really all 3 years didn't win all the time, but really put it to Kentucky. And that was, at the time, the player that Rupp said was the best player he'd ever seen, Kentucky or opponent. Another good player, Pete Maravich, who would go head-to-head the same years with Dan Issel in the late 60s. And there's, I think, a really cool picture in there where Issel's up to block the shot of Maravich, and Maravich is, you know, going up for one of his many jump shots. And so you don't know what happens. You know, if the shot is blocked or the shot is – annoying Maravich, he probably got it off, may not have made it. And then another one was they had a really big matchup, at least in 1959 or 60, against Ohio State, who actually – the year they played Kentucky beat them, but Ohio State went on to win the NCAA championship. And that's a picture with Jerry Lucas and yes. John Havlicek in there. So those are some of the ones I wanted to include that were not UK players. And there's also the ABA had some games in there with the Kentucky Colonels. So you have Dr. J at the time of the New York Nets. It's a picture of him playing at the Coliseum as well. So another... you know, non-Kentucky star in there.
Yeah, I remember seeing the Colonels play at the Coliseum. They did play then at that time. The Colonels were an extremely popular team and had some success, won the 50 years ago, won the 75 ABA championship, but they do have a history at the Coliseum as well. One of the big moments fairly early in the Coliseum's history was Vernon Hatton's shot against Temple that tied a game and sent it into overtime, and a miracle shot, really, from nearly half court, and they marked the spot, but that was one of the things that became, I guess, a permanent reminder in the Coliseum.
Yes. UK, one of the things they used to do going back to Alumni Gym was for these long shots, they would put either a nail, they would hit the nail in the floor, and so there's at least three nails in Alumni Gym. Memorial Coliseum, they put a nail where Vern Hatton hit this shot you're talking about that went to overtime. Eventually, UK won in double overtime against Temple. And they put after that, they painted a little star around it. And what I've heard is that Vernon Hatton, what I read in the paper was, eventually when they replaced the floor maybe 15 years ago in the Coliseum for the first time, they cut out that and gave that to Vernon Hatton. So I assume that's at least it was in the Hatton family. So they do like to commemorate, you know, little things even on the floor, which I think is very cool. I wish they did that in Rupp Arena.
The high school chapter of Memorial Coliseum is a great one, too. 51 through 64, I think you said in the book, was the era when the Sweet 16 was played at the Coliseum. And, of course, some great tournaments and great players passed through the Coliseum during those days as well. And if you saw a photo from a Sweet 16 high school game, it might look like a UK game from a distance because the crowd was huge and very much into it. And that was just really a huge event, and the Coliseum helped make it so.
Yes, and the court was just surrounded by reporters and radio stations from across the state that were carrying the game back home. And so it probably had more media attention than, you know, the average UK game. It's also interesting, you know, the court's a little smaller for high school, so you see all these. Now they just put down a new floor. At the time, it would have to make do, and they would paint, you know, sort of these lines and move the – so there's a picture in the book. You can see everything sort of – you're getting double vision with a different free throw line and a baseline, and you wonder if that affected some of the calls where the referee is looking at the wrong line. That's very interesting. Yeah, big crowds. When the Coliseum opened, that was – you know, they had already been coming to Alumni Gym. Then they started coming to the Coliseum for that. Eventually, they would start trading off between – Lexington and Louisville after Freedom Hall was built later in the 50s. And you know, that's the Coliseum, you know, is where, you know, it probably the best memories of, well, in my opinion, mm-hmm. of the high school tournament, you know, were.
Yeah. My late mother was a graduate of Carr Creek High School and would want me to mention the 1956 team that won the state championship. And, of course, King Kelly Coleman, Kentucky, still probably Kentucky's most famous high school basketball player, known inside the state and held the scoring record for so many years until Travis Perry broke it just a few years back. And that was a big moment. That 1956 tournament stands out probably as much as any of them, although every championship is great for those schools that are competing.
Yeah, a couple pictures of Coleman in action in the book, and you know, he ended up, you know, setting the scoring record for the tournament, 68 points in a sort of a what do you call it, a not the winner's game, but the consolation game.
Yes, they had one of those in the format back then. We mentioned women's basketball earlier, and the women's team, of course, still plays their home games in the Coliseum, the newly renovated historic Memorial Coliseum now, part of the name. Kentucky played a game against Old Dominion in 1983 at the Coliseum and drew 10,622 people, which at that time was the largest crowd ever to watch a women's game in the U.S., so the Coliseum has another distinction there.
Yeah, they've had, you know, success more probably recently, but Valerie Stills, you know, the all-time more points than any other U.K. basketball player, played in the 1980s, All-American. And so they are building on that, and I think the future is very bright. You're going to see even bigger games. The capacity is now smaller than that with the renovation, but the sight lines and the comfort and the AC is better, so the women's basketball future is bright.
Well, I can throw in one other perspective from a student. In my day, my freshman year, I remember that the drop ad process was held at Memorial Coliseum. So if you had to change a class, you did it at Memorial Coliseum, which was a little bit intimidating for a freshman. But you can imagine at that time walking into a building the size of Memorial Coliseum and seeing hundreds of people around and people at tables and all of that. But it was just one more purpose of the Coliseum, and it was really a part of campus life and of Lexington's life and the life of Kentucky. And as you say, it is a monument and stage and arena. And we probably should give mention to some of the performers who appeared at the Coliseum. You have some photos in there as well, but just a couple of highlights there.
Okay, so on the artistic side.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, that goes way back from the beginning. For a couple of years, Bob Hope did a special. It was sort of an offshoot of the Kentucky Derby, and it was a charity event at the Coliseum. And they had so many people attend, they actually put seats, you know, on the floor, which they would do for, you know, commencement exercises and big concerts. So this was Bob Hope bringing his cavalcade of stars to the Coliseum for a couple of years. They would have, you know, world-class orchestras and piano players come to the Coliseum, and for really just almost a pittance, the public could come and see the type of performance that you may have to, you know, go to Europe before to see. The Coliseum was the largest, at the time, largest auditorium in the South. And then through time, they would have concerts. You know, you had jazz, you had Peter, Paul and Mary, you had the everybody can mention the Eagles, you had country, and those are put on a lot. They were open to the public, but they were put on by the student association.
Right.
And then when Rupp Arena, you know, opened up, that kind of became the central, obviously, for concerts. But up through the 70s, that was the, you know, all the concerts that came through Lexington would be at the Coliseum. And so there's decades of memories of the people going to concerts. That was their big moment and what they recall.
And this book is your third, right? You have a couple other books that you've written before?
Well, the one previous to that is called House of Champions, and that's a general history. It has not as many pictures in it. It's more of a text, but that goes, you know, the history of all of the UK arenas up to the opening of Rupp Arena. So that's more of a good, I think, general history, give you a good background. The one before that was a self-published travel, sort of a travel book. Rick Steves is always, if you're into travel, he's a budget travel guru for Europe. I used to try to take his books and follow as best I could. So that book's called Where Am I, Rick Steves? And that's just what I hope is a comical take on trying my best to follow his lead and failing miserably.
Well, the current one is called Memorial Coliseum 75 Years as Monument, Stage, and Arena. And tell us about where you can find it and how do you get hold of it.
Well, if you're in Lexington or around that area, even up into Florence, that I know for sure because I go up there and check, the book would be in all those books, the major bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Joseph Beth here. Online, it's going to be available on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. The publisher is Acclaim Press, so they have acclaimpress.com. You can get it through there. So it's out and about, and I hope folks will read it and enjoy it.
And just as a final thought, what did you gain from the experience of all of this? I mean, it took a while to put together. Now you see it, you can hold it in your hands. What did you gain from this experience?
Well, the big part of me is being a big blue basketball fan, and so every piece of labor I put into that was fun for me, and so I just enjoy accumulating that knowledge and being able to share it. So having something physical, I think, that can be passed on by people, it's something hopefully that people can share, old timers can share with the next generation, or the next generation can appreciate. And it'll be on bookshelves and taken down from time to time. So that's what I hope.
All right. Well, congratulations again on the publication of the book. Again, it's Memorial Coliseum, 75 years as Monument, Stage, and Arena. Kevin Cook has been with us. Thanks so much, Kevin, for your time.
Thank you, Keith. I had a ball. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the WUKY Sports Page with your host, Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced at the WUKY studios by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to the Sports Page through iTunes, Google Play, or at our website, wuky.org. Thank you.